Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored.
This is a CBS News special report. Donald Trump's presidential address to Congress.
Good evening. I'm Maurice Dubois.
I'm John Dickerson. President Trump is about to speak to Congress and an audience of millions watching at home.
It is his first address to a joint session of the House and Senate since he began his second term in January. And a busy start it's been. He's only been in office 6 weeks now, and it's set in motion actions that aim to overturn decades of domestic and international policies.
Just today, he increased tariffs on our three biggest trade partners, Canada, Mexico, and China. Last week, the president berated the president of Ukraine in an Oval Office meeting as insufficiently grateful and saying he wasn't ready for peace.
Tonight, the theme of the president's address is the renewal of the American dream. He is expected to focus on the economy, his accomplishments during his first month and a half in office, and border security.
And while this will look like the annual State of the Union address, it is not that. The president is following a tradition started in the modern era by Ronald Reagan to speak to a joint session in the first weeks of a new administration.
And we're joined now by Margaret Brennan, Face the Nation moderators. We look at these scenes here inside the chamber. Margaret, a president who is extremely confident is about to stride into that chamber tonight.
More confident than he was during his first term. Truly, he is entering that chamber tonight having dealt many shocks to the system at home and abroad. We may get a few more tonight. But just overnight, as you were just saying, John, he has launched this trade war against our largest trading partners. That is a big bet that consumers will tolerate some degree of financial pain, despite the fact that he was elected on this platform of causing less economic pain than people had been experiencing through inflation during the last 4 years.
And fixing the economy on day one.
Exactly. But it takes time. He'll say that give him 6 to 12 months before he owns this economy. That's his approach. So he'll characterize this as fixing the wrong still. There are still massive job cuts that are working its way through the system across the country. We don't yet know how that's going to feel, but he's going to argue that Elon Musk, who's leading that effort in many ways, is doing necessary work, that it's necessary pain. We're looking at a chamber here that has largely, when it comes to Republican lawmakers, not impeded him in any way. And for the Democratic lawmakers, any attempts they've made have been largely unsuccessful. So he feels pretty unconstrained. He will have to ask them, though, for money. Congress controls those purse strings, and you'll hear him ask about that when it comes to funding his priorities at the border.
And he's also, and we're going to get around to this later, because the Congress is hard to work with. There we see the First Lady entering. First Lady Melania Trump, who was just on the Hill.
And right next to her was Steve Witkoff, a dear friend of the president's who's now taken on a large role in this administration as Mideast envoy.
Margaret, the president's, he's saying, judge me in a little while on the economy, but he's moving quickly on issues like Ukraine, right? He's not saying, let that go slowly. It'll be interesting tonight to see which things he says, well, it'll take me a while, other things he's moving quickly. What's the latest on the set to between him and the president of Ukraine?
Well, that's going to be watched very closely tonight by our adversaries like China, who want to know how much maneuvering room they have, given the room given to Vladimir Putin, but also by the allies and partners. Ukraine's ambassador, just to give you a physical manifestation of this, John, is not up there with the First Lady as she was in the years past. She is down with the rest of the diplomatic corps. She is present. We know President Trump says he still wants to bring ultimately peace between Russia and Ukraine, but that is at the moment not happening. No negotiations underway.
And there we see the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, returning to familiar climbs since he was a senator there from Florida, walking down. The cabinet is arriving. Weijia Zhang is at the White House. I want to bring her in. Weijia, what can we expect to hear from this from the president in these remarks?
John, I've been talking to White House sources all day here, and they say this is going to be a totally Trumpian speech when it comes to the tone. Even late this evening, he was huddling with his team and his speech writers to make last-minute edits, because this is all going to be, they say, in his voice. And so the president has organized this speech into four very distinctive parts. He will start off talking about all the things he considers to be his accomplishments and then pivot to the economy. And we were told that he was going to talk about the, quote, mess that he inherited. And now we have excerpts to show what that means, because, John, I have several excerpts here from his speech, and he will name-check former President Biden several times. As an example, he will say, Joe Biden, especially let the price of eggs get out of control, and we are working hard to get it back down. The next part of his speech, he will make a direct plea to Congress to say that despite all of the things he has accomplished on the southern border, they need more border security funding, which you may remember a bipartisan bill to provide just that ultimately failed under the Biden administration. And then he will talk about foreign policy. And John, in these excerpts that the White House has provided, he does talk about Ukraine. He is going to say, I am tirelessly working to end the savage conflict in Ukraine, and talk about the billions of dollars that the U.S. has already sent. And another dig at Biden, saying Biden has authorized more money in this fight than Europe has spent. But what we don't know is whether he'll break any news on where things currently stand, because, of course, we are watching this back and forth between the U.S. and Ukraine, between Trump and Zelensky, who issued a lengthy statement, stopping short of apologizing for what we saw in the Oval Office, but saying we need to get things back on course, John. And so there's so many things to watch here, but we are told again that this is going to be a big speech and the president is going to have a lot of fun.
Okay, Weijia Jiang at the White House, thank you so much. As we watch, as the cabinet members, there's RFK Jr., Health Secretary, and Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, and others making their way in right now. Let's go to Major Garrett for your expectations tonight. Major, I'm wondering in particular about foreign policy and upending the whole world order. Any thoughts on that?
Certainly, Maurice. As Margaret said, President Trump is much more aggressive and full of confidence this second time around as compared to the first time around. The White House has said the theme for tonight is a renewal of the American dream. I would say another theme is the president is essentially telling the country and anyone watching overseas, I am the voice of volatility, because volatility changes the status quo. President Trump has made it pretty clear, both internally with domestic politics here, whether it's diversity, equity, inclusion, transgender rights, cryptocurrency, immigration policy, jawboning the Federal Reserve, that he is a fan of volatility because it changes people's perspective. It rattles people's cages. And he wants that volatility extended not to our enemies, hardly any discouraging words from President Trump about Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping. Lots of volatility with our closest geographic neighbors, Canada and Mexico, in the form of tariffs, Panama, talking about the Panama Canal, Greenland, and if not disparaging, certainly undermining some of the underpinnings of the transatlantic alliance and NATO. All of what Trump has done in the first 6 weeks is press the envelope on volatility to change people's perspective, change the conversation, keep him at the center of it, because he will tell the American people in so many words, when volatility occurs, that strengthens my ability to negotiate. And if you trust me to negotiate, all will end well. I'm not here to predict all will end well, but that will be the subtext of the president's remarks.
Major Garrett, thank you so much. Now we'd like to bring in Chief White House Correspondent Nancy Cordes. Nancy, hefty new tariffs on imported goods from Canada, Mexico, and China. Those went into effect today. China said it will retaliate. Canada is already hitting back. But now this afternoon, the Commerce Secretary said that, I've been on the phone and maybe those tariffs will go away. Where are we on this?
Right. Policy moves fast in Trump world, sometimes from day to day, sometimes from hour to hour. And the Commerce Secretary now says that these new tariffs that were just imposed less than 24 hours ago could be lifted tomorrow. If President Trump is happy with what he's hearing from the leaders of Mexico and Canada, is it that, or is it because the Dow fell 1,300 points in 2 days and even some Republicans expressed alarm and said they didn't didn't think that these tariffs were going to work. They felt that they would raise prices. You started hearing from big box retailers like Target and Best Buy saying they were going to have to raise their prices. Hard to say what triggered this, but we now know that it's looking like President Trump, for the second time in just about a month, could be stepping back from tariffs that he has wanted to impose on Canada and Mexico. It hasn't happened yet, so we can't say it's a guarantee, but this is something that will probably come as a big relief to members of his own party.
Okay, Nancy Cordes, thank you so much. Again, President running a little bit behind here. We will talk now to senior White House and political correspondent Ed O'Keefe with the latest from our CBS News polling. Ed, we've been looking at these same polls, and we have seen warning signs for the president when it comes to the economy in particular.
That's right, Maurice. He has a 51-49% approval rating right now, so evenly split, it would seem, amongst Americans. And when you ask them the question, what do you want to hear about tonight, overwhelmingly, they want to hear him talk about lowering prices. And that's because, in part, 77% of Americans in our most recent CBS News poll say that their incomes are not keeping up with inflation. They also want to hear about his plans for Medicare and Medicaid amid conversation among Republicans about revamping that program. Less about things like cutting government spending, which, of course, has gotten such outsized attention given Elon Musk and that Department of Government Efficiency that have been slashing government operations across the federal government. Among those watching tonight, important to remember and think about who he's addressing. 54% of those planning to tune in tonight are Republican, therefore favor the president. That's almost the inverse of what we saw just a year ago when it was predominantly Democrats who supported President Biden who were tuning in and Republicans who were tuning out. So he knows that he has a mostly friendly audience tuning in to hear what he's been up to, which is part of why we know he's expected to tout these early moves that he's been making over the last 6 weeks. The other thing that's interesting about what Americans are perceiving about what he talks about tonight, 82% think, for example, that the economy should be a high priority for the president, but just 36% of Americans think the president's actually prioritizing that a lot. This is a confusing box when you first look at it, but what you realize here is what people are saying is, I want to hear more about the economy and inflation. I don't hear the president talking enough about that, which is telling why the White House today was so insistent to all of us. He will talk about the economy. He will talk about tariffs. He will talk about inflation. They see our numbers. They see other numbers that suggest people still very concerned about issues of dollars and cents.
And of course, Ed O'Keefe, the peril for presidents taking the eye off the ball in the early part of their presidency when they were elected to fix the economy, Bill Clinton being one example, Barack Obama being the other. So there is some historical tough waters there for the presidents who ignore the economy. CBS News chief Washington analyst Bob Costa has been talking to his sources. Bob, what are your sources telling you? And picking up on Ed's point about this being a conversation with Republicans, not just Republican voters, but of course, Republicans in the hall he'll be speaking to.
Great to be with you, John and Maurice and Margaret. When I talk to sources close to President Trump, they say when he reflects on this speech tonight, he's thinking back to that inaugural address just down the hall that was held inside the Capitol. And he had all of those billionaire CEOs flanking him. That was a projection of power. Now, just a few weeks later, with his address to a joint session of Congress, he wants to project his power in front of this Republican-controlled Congress.
Bob, do you know if this is going to be a long speech?
Mr.
President
Speaker,
has, whoops,
the President
let's wait.
Of the United States.
Sergeant of Arms, and of course, people lining up, members of Congress who get there early so they can shake the president's hand. Bob Costa, back to you as we see the president go through a long handshaking session here. Back to your point about what your reporting was telling you.
What we see here, based on people close to the president, is a commander in chief who's totally at ease with the power he has won with this second term. It was just a little under 10 years ago he came down that escalator in New York. Now he's coming down inside of the House chamber to the lectern, and he has the Senate and the House behind him. He has much of Wall Street behind him, as uncomfortable as they are with tariffs. He has Silicon Valley, epitomized by Elon Musk, behind him in many respects. The challenge for him, I'm told by those close to him, is just how far can President Trump push his power at this moment? He has overcome an assassination attempt. He was convicted of a crime last year in New York, faced civil criminal charges, a federal investigation, now back in the White House. Can he really reframe the world, global politics and domestic politics, in his image? This speech tonight is not just a speech, I'm told. It's a statement about who he is and what kind of historic presidency he is trying to mount this time around.
And Bob, when you frame it that way, what a journey it has been since coming down that escalator in Trump Tower. Let's go now to Scott McFarlane. He is inside the chamber. Scott, give us a feeling for what that's like right now.
You can see from my vantage point, Maurice, the Democrats largely are not standing. They're seated, they're not clapping, they're not moving as President Trump walks towards the dais. Some of them you'll see, Maurice and John, some of the House Democrats are wearing these very bright pink blazers, members of the Democratic Women's Caucus. They say that is a unified visual of protest against President Trump. There'll also be a few empty seats on the House Democratic side. Several members are sitting this out, saying they can't be in the same room with Donald Trump at this moment. This is his first time in this House chamber speaking to Congress since the January 6th riot by Trump supporters. I'll also note this. Up here in the top level with me, Elon Musk, wearing a suit in the guest box. He's standing and clapping next to the FBI director, Kash Patel, and members of the Trump family. They're seated to the president's left when he gets up to the dais and begins speaking.
We see the president there speaking to the combatant commanders. You saw him shaking hands with the Supreme Court justices. Worth noting tonight, the amount of power that is in the Capitol all at once. We are told that the designated survivor tonight is VA Secretary, Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins, who is in a secure location, according to our Olivia Rinaldi, because certainly this is a focus of those who wish us ill will.
And just as they go through another round of applause, Caitlin Huey Burns is up on the Hill. Caitlin, what are Democrats doing in preparation for tonight?
Well, after this election, Democrats have been trying to figure their way out of the wilderness, and they've been hearing an earful from their constituents back home who want them to do more, do what they can to oppose the president. Remember, they are in the minority and are limited legislatively in what they can do. But the House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries urged Democrats to show up today to show their strength in opposition to the president. Remember, it just takes three Republicans to defect in order for Democrats to blow everything up here. The majority that Republicans have is indeed fragile. Democrats are trying to hold it together in opposition to this president, and we'll see how they do it tonight.
Okay, so the speaker is supposed to introduce the president. See if that happens as he basks in the moment.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Thank you very much. Speaker Johnson, Vice President Vance, the First Lady of the United States, members of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens, America is back. Six weeks ago, I stood beneath the dome of this Capitol and proclaimed the dawn of the golden age of America. From that moment on, it has been nothing but swift and unrelenting action to usher in the greatest and most successful era in the history of our country. We have accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or 8 years, and we are just getting started. I return to this chamber tonight to report that America's momentum is back, our spirit is back, our pride is back, our confidence is back, and the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before. The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback, the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again. It's never been anything like it. The presidential election of November 5th was a mandate like has not been seen in many decades. We won all seven swing states, giving us an electoral college victory of 312 votes. We won the popular vote by big numbers and won counties in our country. In our country, 2,700 to 525, on a map that reads almost completely red for Republican. Now, for the first time in modern history, more Americans believe that our country is headed in the right direction than the wrong direction. In fact, it's an astonishing record. 27-point swing, the most ever. Likewise, small business optimism saw its single largest one-month gain ever recorded, a 41-point jump.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning. Members are engaging in willful and continuing breach of decorum, and the chair is prepared to direct the Sergeant-at-Arms to restore order to the joint session. Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir. There's no magic. Take your seat. Finding that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum, the chair now directs the sergeant-at-arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber.
Congressman Green of Texas, 77 years old, he is being escorted out of the chamber at the order of the Speaker of the House because he was not maintaining decorum during the president's speech.
Over the past 6 weeks, I have signed nearly 100 executive orders and taken more than 400 executive actions, a record, to restore common sense, safety, optimism, and wealth all across our wonderful land. The people elected me to do the job, and I'm doing it. In fact, it has been stated by many that the first month of our presidency, it's our presidency, is the most successful in the history of our nation. By many. And what makes it even more impressive is that, do you know who number two is? George Washington. How about that? I don't know about that list, but we'll take it. Within hours of taking the oath of office, I declared a national emergency on our southern border, and I deployed the U.S. military and Border Patrol to repel the invasion of our country. And what a job they've done. As a result, illegal border crossings last month were by far the lowest ever recorded, ever. They heard my words and they chose not to come. Much easier that way. In comparison, under Joe Biden, the worst president in American history, there were hundreds of thousands of illegal crossings a month, and virtually all of them, including murderers, drug dealers, gang members, and people from mental institutions and insane asylums, were released into our country. Who would want to do that? This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be this way. So, Democrats sitting before me, for just this one night, why not join us in celebrating so many incredible wins for America? For the good of our nation, let's work together and let's truly make America great again. Every day my administration is fighting to deliver the change America needs to bring a future that America deserves. And we're doing it. This is a time for big dreams and bold action. Upon taking office, I imposed an immediate freeze on all federal hiring, a freeze on all new federal regulations, and a freeze on all foreign aid. I terminated the ridiculous Green New Scam. I withdrew from the unfair Paris Climate Accord, which was costing us trillions of dollars that other countries were not paying. I withdrew from the corrupt World Health Organization. And I also withdrew from the anti-American UN Human Rights Council. We ended all of Biden's environmental restrictions that were making our country far less safe and totally unaffordable. And importantly, we ended the last administration's insane electric vehicle mandate, saving our auto workers and companies from economic destruction. To unshackle our economy, I have directed that for every one new regulation, 10 old regulations must be eliminated, just like I did in my very successful first day. And in that first term, we set records on ending unnecessary rules and regulations like no other president had done before. We ordered all federal workers to return to the office. They will either show up for work in person or be removed from their job. And we have ended weaponized government where, as an example, a sitting president is allowed to viciously prosecute his political opponent, like me. How did that work out? Not too good. Not too good. And I have stopped all government censorship and brought back free speech in America. It's back. And 2 days ago, I signed an order making English the official language of the United States of America. I renamed the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. And likewise, I renamed, for a great president, William McKinley, Mount McKinley again. Beautiful Alaska. We love Alaska. We've ended the tyranny of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies all across the entire federal government and, indeed, the private sector and our military. And our country will be woke no longer. We believe that whether you are a doctor, an accountant, a lawyer, or an air traffic controller, you should be hired and promoted based on skill and competence, not race or gender. Very important. You should be hired based on merit. And the Supreme Court, in a brave and very powerful decision, has allowed us to do so. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have removed the poison of critical race theory from our public schools, and I signed an order making it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female. I also signed an executive order to ban men from playing in women's sports. Three years ago, Peyton McNabb was an all-star high school athlete, one of the best, preparing for a future in college sports. But when her girls' volleyball match was invaded by a male, he smashed the ball so hard in Peyton's face, causing traumatic brain injury, partially paralyzing her right side and ending her athletic career. It was a shot like she's never seen before. She's never seen anything like it. Peyton is here tonight in the gallery, and Peyton, from now on, schools will kick the men off the girls' team, or they will lose all federal funding. If you really want to see numbers, just take a look at what happened in the women's boxing, weightlifting, track and field, swimming, or cycling, where a male recently finished a long-distance race 5 hours and 14 minutes ahead of a woman for a new record by 5 hours. Broke the record by 5 hours. It's demeaning for women, and it's very bad for our country. We're not going to put up with it any longer. What I have just described is only a small fraction of the common sense revolution that is now, because of us, sweeping the entire world. Common sense has become a common theme, and we will never go back. Never, ever going to let that happen. Among my very highest priorities is to rescue our economy and get dramatic and immediate relief to working families. As you know, we inherited from the last administration an economic catastrophe and an inflation nightmare. Their policies drove up energy prices, pushed up grocery costs, and drove the necessities of life out of reach for millions and millions of Americans. They've never had anything like it. We suffered the worst inflation in 48 years, but perhaps even in the history of our country, they're not sure. As president, I'm fighting every day to reverse this damage and make America affordable again. Joe Biden especially let the price of eggs get out of control. The egg price is out of control, and we're working hard to get it back down. Secretary, do a good job on that. You inherited a total mess from the previous administration. Do a good job. A major focus of our fight to defeat inflation is rapidly reducing the cost of energy. The previous administration cut the number of new oil and gas leases by 95% slowed pipeline construction to a halt, and closed more than 100 power plants. We are opening up many of those power plants right now. And frankly, we have never seen anything like it. That's why on my first day in office, I declared a national energy emergency. As you've heard me say many times, we have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on Earth, and by far. And now I fully authorize the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill Baby Drill. My administration is also working on a gigantic natural gas pipeline in Alaska, among the largest in the world, where Japan, South Korea, and other nations want to be our partner with investments of trillions of dollars each. There's never been anything like that one. It will be truly spectacular. It's all set to go. The permitting is gotten. And later this week, I will also take historic action to dramatically expand production of critical minerals and rare earths here in the USA. To further combat inflation, we will not only be reducing the cost of energy, but we'll be ending the flagrant waste of taxpayer dollars. And to that end, I have created the brand new Department of Government Efficiency, GOGE. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps. Which is headed by Elon Musk, who is in the gallery tonight. Thank you, Elon. He's working very hard. He didn't need this. He didn't need this. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Everybody here, even this side, appreciates it, I believe. They just don't want to admit that. Just listen to some of the appalling waste we have already identified. $22 billion from HHS to provide free housing and cars for illegal aliens. $45 million for diversity, equity, and inclusion scholarships in Burma. $40 million to improve the social and economic inclusion of sedentary migrants. Nobody knows what that is. $8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of. $60 million for indigenous peoples and Afro-Colombian empowerment in Central America. $60 million. $8 million for making mice transgender. This is real. $32 million for a left-wing propaganda operation in Moldova. $10 million for male circumcision in Mozambique. $20 million for the Arab Sesame Street in the Middle East. It's a program. $20 million for a program. $1.9 billion to recently created Decarbonization of Homes Committee, headed up, and we know she's involved. Just at the last moment, the money was passed over by a woman named Stacey Abrams. Have you ever heard of her? A $3.5 million consulting contract for lavish fish monitoring. $1.5 million for voter confidence in Liberia, $14 million for social cohesion in Mali, $59 million for illegal alien hotel rooms in New York City. He's a real estate developer. He's done very well. $250,000 to increase vegan local climate action innovation in Zambia. $42 million for social and behavior change in Uganda. $14 million for improving public procurement in Serbia. $47 million for improving learning outcomes in Asia. Asia's doing very well with learning. You know what we're doing. Should use it ourselves. And $101 million for DEI contracts at the Department of Education, the most ever paid, nothing even like it. Under the Trump administration, all of these scams, and they're far worse, but I didn't think it was appropriate to talk about them. They're so bad. Many more have been found out and exposed and swiftly terminated by a group of very intelligent, mostly young people, headed up by Elon, and we appreciate it. We found hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud. And we've taken back the money and reduced our debt to fight inflation and other things. Taking back a lot of that money. We got it just in time. This is just the beginning. The Government Accountability Office, a federal government office, has estimated annual fraud of over $500 billion in our nation, and we are working very hard to stop it. We're going to. We're also identifying shocking levels of incompetence and probable fraud in the Social Security program for our seniors, and that our seniors and people that we love rely on. Believe it or not, government databases list 4.7 million Social Security members from people aged 100 to 109 years old. It lists 3.6 million people from ages 110 to 119. I don't know any of them. I know some people that are rather elderly, but not quite that elderly. 3.47 million people from ages 120 to 129. 3.9 million people from ages 130 to 139. 3.5 million people from ages 140 to 149. And money is being paid to many of them. And we're searching right now. In fact, Pam, good luck. Good luck. You're going to find it. But a lot of money is paid out to people because it just keeps getting paid and paid and nobody does. And it really hurts Social Security and hurts our country. 1.3 million people from ages 150 to 159 and over 130,000 people, according to the Social Security databases, are age over 160 years old. We have a healthier country than I thought, Bobby. Including, to finish, 1,039 people between the ages of 220 and 229, one person between the age of 240 and 249, and one person is listed at 360 years of age. More than 100 years. More than 100 years older than our country. But we're going to find out where that money's going. And it's not going to be pretty. By slashing all of the fraud, waste, and theft we can find, We will defeat inflation, bring down mortgage rates, lower car payments and grocery prices, protect our seniors, and put more money in the pockets of American families. And today, interest rates took a beautiful drop, big, beautiful drop. It's about time. And in the near future, I want to do what has not been done in 24 years, balance the federal budget. We're going to balance it. With that goal in mind, we have developed in great detail what we are calling the Gold Card, which goes on sale very, very soon. For $5 million, we will allow the most successful job-creating people from all over the world to buy a path to U.S. citizenship. It's like the Green Card, but better and more sophisticated. And these people will have to pay tax in our country. They won't have to pay tax from where they came. The money that they've made, you wouldn't want to do that, but they have to pay tax, create jobs. They'll also be taking people out of colleges and paying for them so that we can keep them in our country instead of having them being forced out. Number one at the top school, as an example, being forced out and not being allowed to stay and create tremendous numbers of jobs and great success for a company out there. So while we take out the criminals, killers, traffickers, and child predators who are allowed to enter our country under the open border policy of these people, the Democrats, the Biden administration, the open border insane policies that you've allowed to destroy our country, we will now bring in brilliant, hardworking, job-creating people. They're going to pay a lot of money, and we're going to reduce our debt with that money. Americans have given us a mandate for bold and profound change. For nearly 100 years, the federal bureaucracy has grown until it has crushed our freedoms, ballooned our deficits, and held back America's potential in every possible way. The nation founded by pioneers and risk takers now drowns under millions and millions of pages of regulations and debt. Approvals that should take 10 days to get instead take 10 years, 15 years, and even 20 years before you're rejected. Meanwhile, we have hundreds of thousands of federal workers who have not been showing up to work. My administration will reclaim power from this unaccountable bureaucracy, and we will restore true democracy to America again. Federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over. And the next phase of our plan to deliver the greatest economy in history is for this Congress to pass tax cuts for everybody. They're in there. They're waiting for you to vote. And I'm sure that the people on my right, I don't mean the Republican right, but my right here, I'm sure you're going to vote for those tax cuts, because otherwise I don't believe the people will ever vote you into office. So I'm doing you a big favor by telling you that. But I know this group is going to be voting for the tax. Thank you. It's a very, very big part of our plan. We had tremendous success in our first term with it, a very big part of our plan. We're seeking permanent income tax cuts all across the board and to get urgently needed relief to Americans hit especially hard by inflation. I'm calling for no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and no tax on Social Security benefits for our great seniors. And I also want to make interest payments on car loans tax deductible, but only if the car is made in America. And by the way, we're going to have growth in the auto industry like nobody's ever seen. Plants are opening up all over the place. Deals are being made. Never seen. That's a combination of the election win and tariffs. It's a beautiful word, isn't it? That, along with our other policies, will allow our auto industry to absolutely boom. It's going to boom. Spoke to the majors today, all three, the top people, and they're so excited. In fact, already numerous car companies have announced that they will be building massive automobile plants in America, with Honda just announcing a new plant in Indiana, one of the largest anywhere in the world. And this has taken place since our great victory on November 5th, a date which will hopefully go down as one of the most important in the history of our country. In addition, as part of our tax cuts, we want to cut taxes on domestic production and all manufacturing. And just as we did before, we will provide 100% expensing. It will be retroactive to January 20th, 2025. And it was one of the main reasons why our tax cuts were so successful in our first term, giving us the most successful economy in the history of our country. First term. We had a great first term. If you don't make your product in America, however, under the Trump administration, you will pay a tariff, and in some cases, a rather large one. Other countries have used tariffs against us for decades, and now it's our turn to start using them against those other countries. On average, the European Union, China, Brazil, India, Mexico, and Canada, have you heard of them? And countless other nations charge us tremendously higher tariffs than we charge them. It's very unfair. India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them. And South Korea's average tariff is four times higher. Think of that, four times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea. But that's what happens. This is happening by friend and foe. This system is not fair to the United States and never was. And so on April 2nd, I wanted to make it April 1st, but I didn't want to be accused of April Fool's Day. That's not, just one day cost us a lot of money. But we're going to do it in April. I'm a very superstitious person. April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in. And whatever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them. If they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market. There's a lot of that, too. They don't even allow us in their market. We will take in trillions and trillions of dollars and create jobs like we have never seen before. I did it with China and I did it with others, and the Biden administration couldn't do anything about it because there was so much money they couldn't do anything about it. We have been ripped off for decades by nearly every country on earth, and we will not let that happen any longer. Much has been said over the last 3 months about Mexico and Canada, but we have very large deficits with both of them. But even more importantly, they've allowed fentanyl to come into our country at levels never seen before, killing hundreds of thousands of our citizens and many very young, beautiful people, destroying families. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. They are, in effect, receiving subsidies of hundreds of billions of dollars. We pay subsidies to Canada and to Mexico of hundreds of billions of dollars, and the United States will not be doing that any longer. We're not going to do it any longer. Thanks to our America First policies we're putting into place, we have had $1.7 trillion of new investment in America